Welcome to AM Best Audio.
Conningview's ESG is a firm-wide effort and offers solutions from both its asset management and risk management software teams. Contact Conning to learn more about how we can help insurers with ESG investing needs.
I'm John Weber for AM Best. This episode is a supplement to the series, The Greening of Insurance Asset Management. The organizations of asset managers interviewed in this episode are advertising sponsors of that series. We've heard from insurers, regulators, trade organizations, and other experts on how values-based investing is gaining a foothold in the insurance industry. Now we're going to hear from the asset managers themselves, the people who handle a large share of insurers' investments.
Welcome, Vin DeLucia of NEOM, or New England Asset Management. We're also joined by Matt Daly of Conning, who was interviewed earlier by my colleague Lee McDonald. We'll drill down deeper on each of the topics, which are drawn from themes raised throughout our series.
How is ESG being incorporated into asset management?
ESG factors are being used alongside more traditional financial metrics to help in the investment decision-making process. We've been doing this for some time at Conning. We think of ESG as non-financial information that can materially impact a company. So this includes the fundamental assessment, general risk awareness, and security valuations. So we integrate ESG in the analytic process. This allows for a more holistic investment decision-making, basically better, more robust information about an industry or a company. So the goal of integrating ESG factors, it's to provide better risk return characteristics for a portfolio and ultimately to enhance investment results. Aside from integration, there's many other ways to consider ESG. These are more unique to individual insurance company preference. That includes things like negative or positive screening or impact investing. So that would be basically using capital to make a social or an environmental difference.
Vin DeLucia, how is ESG being incorporated into asset management?
Well, it really depends on the type of investments that you're running, frankly. To the extent that you are running ESG strategies, if you're running a fund that is focused on ESG parameters, then you certainly have to bring your own thoughts and opinions to the game and implement those in your strategy. That's the one track, and I think that's the track that a lot of folks are hearing about. A separate track is if you do manage separately managed accounts, as many managers do for insurance clients, that track is a little bit different. You're dealing with many, many different sets of client guidelines and many sets of regulatory regimes. And so in that instance, each client really needs to come up with their own, their own assessment or feeling on the importance of ESG and which parameters are important to them. So it's a little bit more nuanced when you're managing separately managed accounts.
So I'd like to ask about the drivers of ESG. Where's that impetus for ESG involvement coming from? Is it internal on your side, clients, insurance clients, regulators, activists? Where are you hearing it from?
So the answer is yes. Okay. It's all of the above. I think there's consensus that material ESG risks need to be considered within the wider context of financial risks for insurance companies. That includes the financial risks associated with climate change. But this is also extended to the impact companies have on the broader environment and the community around them. So this casts a really wide net. And as a result, it's a very expansive group of constituencies that care about ESG. This ranges from the C-suite to shareholders, bondholders, employees, customers, suppliers, and certainly to regulators and rating agencies. I also want to highlight the insurance industry has had long expertise in ESG. It's really a core competency, and it's been more on the underwriting and corporate side of the business, and that's now extending more explicitly to investment portfolios.
One thing I would say at New England Asset Management, we've incorporated ESG principles into our investment decision making for a long time. But what I would say is it's become more formalized, more prevalent, and the nomenclature of ESG has become much more readily accepted at this stage. But a lot of the concepts involved in environmental, social, and governance issues are things that would have been taken into account even previously. So I would say, you know, the impetus really is coming from activists for the most part, I think. But I think it also certainly is going to spill over into the regulatory regime. We are seeing, survey questions that we're getting, even from AM Best at this point, are focusing on ESG factors, at least asking a little bit about them. And I think that that's going to evolve over time. Certainly the SEC is also focused on ESG. From that perspective, perhaps what ESG fund managers are saying they're doing as opposed to what they're actually doing. They need to make sure that that's going to sync up. So it's coming from a lot of different directions, long story short.
When we return,
we're also starting to see some take steps that are more environmentally focused. There's examples in Europe of insurers gradually phasing out investments that have high emissions intensity. And I suspect we could see more of that focus on climate for U.S. insurers as well.
And later on,
the impetus for movement right now is probably going to come from the activist side, and the regulatory side may eventually make its way into the legislative arena as well.
How do you measure ESG-related activity? Are there any particular metrics or scoring?
Sure. So understanding, measuring, integrating ESG factors, it has to start with reliable, relevant information and data. So this can come from companies themselves, third-party data providers, and we're seeing it now more from rating agencies. So we've done a few things at Conning to address this and ensure the integration of ESG in our decision-making process. First, Conning has a very experienced group of research analysts, and we actually assign our own proprietary ESG risk factor ratings for every company or issuer in our coverage universe. Are the ESG risk factors strong, average, or weak? And then how does that influence our assessment of the company? Does it influence fundamentals positively or negatively? Second, we've created our own framework across industries. So ESG risk factors, they differ in scope and materiality between industries. This ensures that we're applying a consistent framework. And third, and this is more specific to the E in ESG, it's understanding and managing climate risk. So we can run carbon dashboards for our insurance companies. This measures the carbon emissions of a portfolio. It compares it to a relevant benchmark. Our analysts are also considering transition risk of industries and issuers. So basically, as the world moves towards lower carbon emissions, there's policy, regulatory, technology change. We need to understand where that risk resides and also where there could be new opportunity.
Vindalucia, is there a scorecard or some form of measurement you follow?
Yeah, depending on the industry that you're looking at, each industry is going to have a different set of metrics that are important, particularly on the E side. The environmental is sort of bespoke to the individual industry. Things like greenhouse gas emissions, you can measure it as a percentage of revenue or as a percentage of profits. Carbon intensity, water intensity, those are things that really are dependent on the industry. And there are measurements. They are not, I would say they're not uniform at this point. Companies are not all readily disclosing at the same level of detail. And so comparability is tough. It would appear that that's going to come along, though. We're going to get more of a push to get more data and more comparability. So I think that'll improve over time. On the governance and social aspects, things like diversity and diversity in the board, diversity in your workforce, wage gaps across your employee base, all those things are in the process of being measured. Some companies are better at it than others. It does appear that that's the direction we're going to go down. So those are the types of metrics. The challenge right now is that the comparability across many issuers might not be where we want it to be.
You mentioned insurers. Have your insurance clients shown much interest in values-based investing? And what are they telling you?
Sure. So as we're talking with people, we think of ESG and value-based investing as a journey for an insurer. There's some key components to this. There's education, there's information, and then there's action. So in some sense, this is nothing new for the insurance industry. There's been instances of alignment of investment portfolios with their own values for a long time. Think of negative screening for single issue causes. That's a good example of this. So that would be avoiding sin companies or investments in specific countries that might be considered questionable actors. We've seen some clients apply negative or positive screening requirements more related now to ESG in a broader sense. So for example, some are using our Conning proprietary rating or data provider ratings. Some insurers are also showing interest investing in green bonds. That's a very tangible way to integrate ESG values into a portfolio. And it's helped that we have seen more green bond issuance of late as well. And we're also starting to see some take steps that are more environmentally focused. There's examples in Europe of insurers gradually phasing out investments that have high emissions intensity. And I suspect we could see more of that focus on climate for U.S. insurers as well, possibly trying to reduce the carbon footprint of investment portfolios. This would need to be done, though, in a very strategic, deliberate manner in order to still achieve, of course, those overarching goals, things like book income. This could also have a focus on reallocating that capital to investments that have an upward trajectory from a carbon perspective, or maybe those that are better positioned from a transition risk vantage point. But this again brings us back to that need for information that's grounded in reliable data. And that data needs to provide insight regarding the impact of those ESG factors and climate risk. So after an insurer has a strong grasp on these areas, they're then in a much better position to consider the action and implement that in the portfolio. One thing worth emphasizing, it also requires a customized approach for each insurer, because each insurer has their own unique goals and preferences, and also there's no global standard at current.
For the most part, it's a little slower being incorporated into insurance asset management at this stage. I think what we are seeing is some of our clients are interested in exclusionary rules, so certain industries should be kept out of the portfolio, things like tobacco, firearms, gambling, things like that. We're not seeing a lot of that, but we are seeing some, and we are seeing some mandates moving towards having a certain percentage involved in green bonds or sustainable bonds, things of that nature. We are seeing a little bit of a move in that direction, but it's I would say a little bit slower on the uptake in the insurance industry. There is a difference, though, between public companies clearly and large entities versus smaller insurance companies. So the larger ones are already needing to incorporate, and they're getting questions from their investors and stockholders. Smaller companies not so much. So they're coming on stream a little bit later, but it's picking up steam there as well.
When we come back,
the impetus for movement right now is probably going to come from the activist side, and the regulatory side may eventually make its way into the legislative arena as well.
Struggling with today's challenging investment environment? New England Asset Management tailors their services to the insurance industry's unique needs. Learn more by visiting neamgroup.com. That's NEAM, neamgroup.com.
We hear the term stranded assets sort of regularly now. Is that a hypothetical concept, or are there actual examples?
Sure. So yeah, let's start with defining what a stranded asset is. So it relates to assets that lose value due to changes associated with energy transition. So that's a risk directly associated with the transition towards a lower carbon economy. There could be regulatory changes or demand shift on the preference side. So the fossil fuel industry and those reliant on fossil fuels as inputs, they're the ones most at risk here. And there are definitely some real life examples of this. Coal-related investments or power plants, as well as crude-related infrastructure, things like drilling rigs that are sitting idle now. And this is a little bit of a different twist to it, but an interesting example to consider, and just in light of energy transition risk and the reduction of value, recent charges big oil companies have taken. This is largely related to lower crude price assumptions, but in some instances, it's also influenced by energy transition. So this leaves asset managers in a position of needing to understand, quantify, monitor this risk in portfolios as the landscape evolves. It's also important to remember that many of these companies that I'm referring to, they might have downside exposure to transition risk. They possess strong financial flexibility to navigate and successfully evolve and drive their businesses going forward.
Vin, do you have any examples from your experience of stranded assets?
Well, they're going back through time. Stranded assets really was a term, connoting generating capacity in the utilities industry, as you know, where the estimated life of the asset ended up being shorter than what they originally thought, and therefore the cost couldn't be recovered as they, as the utility would have thought that it could be. So that's sort of where the concept originated. It's being utilized now in the fossil fuel space to talk about oil reserves and gas reserves, coal. Probably the closest example to the possibility of stranded assets at this point is coal. A lot of restructuring, a lot of bankruptcies in that industry. So there is some question as to whether or not the coal reserves are actually worth what they say they are on the books. The bankruptcy activity in that space, I think, is indicative of the problems there. So it's real. It's not a hypothetical exercise at all. Grounded originally in the utilities business, but making its way over to the fossil fuel industries as we move through this transition period.
Much of the ESG-related developments have been voluntary from what we've seen. And do you see regulation or law affecting this? And how might that happen?
So the short answer to that is yes. There's no secret that the U.S. has lagged Europe in this area. But we're seeing much more significant action now on our domestic front. So that gap is going to narrow. On the state regulatory side, California, New York, they've been very active here for some time. New York has made clear that insurers need to start to integrate financial risk from climate change. And this touches many aspects of a company, from governance to risk management to investment portfolios. And this is likely to include also stress and scenario testing. So assessing a range of climate scenarios to try and better understand the impact across businesses. Conning has actually developed some tools here to conduct this type of scenario testing on investment portfolios. And then on the federal front, there's been a lot happening there as well. The U.S. rejoined the Paris Agreement. There are goals for a net zero economy by 2050. A story came out actually just last night that the Biden administration is considering a dramatic step up, pledge to cut greenhouse gas emissions from the previous commitments. And that has to entail more regulation, green energy legislation, infrastructure plans, and it's just going to continue to elevate and accelerate the concept of transition risk. There's also numerous pushes towards greater disclosure around climate change. This includes the SEC, The NAIC has included climate risk and resiliency as a strategic priority for this year. So the bottom line, all of this is going to encourage insurers to further increase awareness related to ESG and promote more disclosure.
I think on the regulatory side, we are probably going to see some more questions being asked. I do believe insurance regulators, I do believe the SEC, they're going to be asking additional questions about disclosures. You know, one of the things that I think companies will have to comply with is to the extent that there are disclosures that do need to be made, mutually agreed upon, you know, much like accounting standards in the olden days, you know, FASB said this, you do this. If we get to that point, you know, and it becomes more well-defined, then I think that that is a distinct possibility, certainly on the regulatory side. On the legislative side, I mean, that may come in time with regard to mandates around, you know, around climate. It is possible. I think the impetus for movement right now is probably going to come from the activist side, and the regulatory side may eventually make its way into the legislative arena as well.
Thank you, Vindalucia and Matt Daly, for an interesting and wide-ranging discussion. And thank you for watching part four of the AM Best special presentation, The Greening of Insurance Asset Management. We encourage you to watch our full series, including The Push for Responsible Investing, The Changing Relationship Between Asset Management, Values-Based Investing, and Diversity and Inclusion, and Higher Expectations in an Age of Lower Returns. I'm John Weber for AM Best TV.
Looking to get the full attention of the insurance industry? We have the platforms that will do just that. Whether it be AM Best TV, AM Best Audio, Best Review Magazine, or Best Day. Find out more by calling AM Best Advertising Sales at 908-439-2200, extension 5399, and have a great day.